So what we've seen is a dramatic shift lately in growers looking at decreasing their seeding rates. And a lot of this has been driven by this. I discussed part of this yesterday during my presentation about, you know, what growers are doing. They're moving to 15s, the large growers are. They're looking at ways to, in order to decrease their input costs. And as, you know, and seed usually comes up as, you know, one of the places, well, maybe can I start trimming my seed? What is the optimal planting rate at these different dates? Again, a lot of this has been driven lately, you know, prior to Roundup Ready soybean, bid run soybean, or it was $6 a unit. Now, if you look now, some of the 07 prices were from $31 to $34 list price, farm gate, anywhere from $23.50 to $26.50 for Roundup Ready soybeans. Again, if we look here, what growers have kind of doing, and this is based on our survey we put out, that still about 57% of growers are drilling their beans, 31% of growers, this is out of Indiana, are on 15s, and 12% are basically on 30s. And then when we looked at what Purdue recommends and what the growers are actually doing, on 7.5s, they're right on board. You know, I think we beat that message home very well. However, when we got down to 15s, Purdue's rec was basically, you know, 395,000, but growers are still seeding 444,000. So they're basically about 11% overseeding, and then Purdue's recs on 30s are 319, and growers are basically overseeding by 17%. So in general, what we're tending to see is that the growers, you know, at 15s and 30s are still overseeding their soybean seed, and again, the interesting thing is when we ask them why are they switching to a wider rows, it's to cut their seeding rates. So again, there's a little bit of disparity in what they're doing and what they're saying that they're doing based on some of the survey data. Usually when we talk to growers, the points they make is what is the minimum number of seeds I can throw out there and get 100% yield potential. And then another kind of driving force as well, you know, my father told me, or it's kind of, you look in the books, if I go to a wider row spacing or if I go to a decreased seeding rate, should I plant a bush type bean over an erect stem bean? Basically, you know, the physiology or the phenology of that bush type bean will be able to, you know, compensate for these thinner stands, bush out greater, cause and increase my yield. And then the question with that, is that real or is that a marketing? You know, is that a real effect, or is that something that, or just a marketing tool by companies? And I think if you would nail down a couple of the seed companies, and I'm not going to say any names, but I nailed down a couple of them, and they just would basically tell me, you know, person to person, that it's really, there's no difference between bush and erect beans. I mean, the yield potential is exactly the same. It's just a marketing tool because growers want, I'm putting on my beans on 30s, or I'm cutting my seeding rate, I want a bush bean. So it's basically purely a marketing tool. And we're kind of, in this experiment, looking to test that hypothesis. And then what about a maturity group response? You know, there's been a lot of data shown in Indiana over the last few years. We've seen a switch for most of the growers. A 3.5 to a 3.8 is a full maturity group bean. They're planting a 2.7 to a 3.0. They're planting an earlier maturity group bean. Again, if we move into winter wheat with the pricing we see right now, growers who want to push that maturity group earlier so they get their soybeans harvested so they can get that winter wheat planted in a timely manner. So again, we were kind of testing the maturity group response of this. So it kind of gives you an idea of where we're looking at and what's driving this research. So again, the objective of this experiment was just kind of quantify, does stem architecture or the bush versus erect bean matter, or does maturity group matter, and then at these lower populations. So again, this is basically, I'll give you a quick and dirty. Since most beans in Indiana were still drilled, we did this in a 7.5-inch row spacing. We're looking at different maturity groups. A 2.8 to a 3.6 would be kind of an early to a full, and in the southern, an early to a full season variety. And then again, within these, we also tested the effect of an erect versus a bushy bean. And these are for our different populations. And then over 8 site years. So again, we had it at PPAC, TPAC, ACRE, and then CPAC were our locations. We use a PROC mix, you know, basically analysis of variance and regression equation using the maximum likelihood estimation. So we're going to quickly get into the yield and composition results. Basically, if we look at seed mass, population affected seed mass at all the northern locations. It was kind of interesting. At the higher populations, we actually had increased seed mass. So in a 200 seed count, the highest populations, we had the highest seed mass. Population didn't have any effect on the southern locations. And then seed mass was influenced in the early maturity group variety. So if you look at planting early maturity group variety in the northern part of the state, that's where the seed mass is significantly increased. And basically, it came down to environmental factors such as rainfall, and temperature during that grain fill period, which we're kind of looking at right now in a little deeper investigation of this. Now, if we look at the population effect on pod numbers per plant, again, in general, it came out to be right about 370,000 plants per hectare. Seven of the eight site years, basically, that we maxed out pod number per plant. So that's basically our threshold population for maxing out the population or pod number on a per plant basis. If we look at oil content, we really just saw some varietal differences. We didn't see any effect at all on population on oil content. Again, and we didn't really see any trends regarding maturity groups or anything along those lines. In terms of seed protein, what we did see an effect was higher seed protein at our higher populations. So again, with the relationship between oil and protein, we would expected to see, I'll kind of go back one here if I can, we would expected to possibly see, even though it is trending down, that a different type of relationship since they are inversely correlated. Oops, wrong direction. So in general, oil content was not affected by population. However, it was affected by variety. If we look at the variety test programs, let's say at University of Wisconsin, where I'm at right now, we're looking at even in the top highest yielding varieties, we see anything from 17.9 to a 19.9% oil content within those highest yielding varieties. So that's where the biggest varietal or effect in oil would be, is just through variety selection. Protein, we really saw a lot of variability. We really couldn't nail anything down in terms of protein effect by maturity groups in these different locations, environment, or anything else. If we look at grain yield, we'll basically look at all the different locations. In general, what we saw, obviously we saw some differences among varieties, and really none of the, there was no maturity group jumped out differences. There's kind of a little bit of intermingling here, but in general, among all of these locations, what we'll see is between basically 370,000 seeds per hectare was the optimal seeding rate at acre. We get over a NEPAC, basically. We didn't see any differences from around 120,000 seeds per hectare. PPAC, again, we were up at 370. CPAC, southern, we basically was around 220,000 seeds per hectare. So in general, what I just kind of want to indicate and stress, and I think this goes back to some of the reports from the seed industry themselves, that there's really no differences in stem architecture, bush bean versus an erect bean. If you look at how soybeans are bred, all of our soybean breeding programs are bred on 30-inch rows. So what does that tell us? I mean, they're not going to pick an erect stem bean on a 30-inch row that doesn't yield. So since that's where the breeding programs, that's the selection, we're really not going to see any differences. And in terms of any differences between a bush and a rec stem, it would probably just be the genetics and the yield potential on that variety, and really has nothing to do with that stem architecture. Again, yield potential differed, and the optimal seeding range was between 247 and 370 in the northern locations, and very consistent. And I think I see a few of my colleagues across the country that are in the southern part of the country would probably indicate the same things, that we've seen data that you can get down to 50,000 plants per acre in some of the southern locations and not have any effect on yield. So I think it just has, again, if we look at population, what's driving yield, it's leaf area and getting that leaf area out there and driving yield. So in conclusions again, basically when it comes to stem architecture, we discussed that. soybean oil content was pretty stable, but again, if you're looking at oil content, and as I indicate to our growers with biodiesel, you pick the highest yielding variety first, and then within that highest yielding rank of varieties, you have a huge range in oil between those. And again, the highest ones we saw was in all of our highest yielding varieties across the Wisconsin sites, anywhere from a 17.9 to a 19.9% oil content. So a big variability even within those higher yielding soybean varieties. We weren't able, again, to nail anything down with protein content, and then optimal seeding range was between 247 and 370 at all of these locations. And again, I think if we look at the data coming out of Iowa State, we look at the data coming out of Chad Lee's program at Kentucky, again, I think it all comes down to that base threshold of 100,000 plants per hectare is what we need. And that's pretty much the base threshold among many of these environments, and even if we get over to the East Coast and South, I mean, might be below 100,000 is what we need for a base threshold for 100% yield potential. So I guess with that, I will kind of end this now and kind of ask if there's any questions. Otherwise, I'll let you all go to lunch so that you don't have to wait in such long lines. But thank you. Yep. Yeah, we basically, our final stands, and that's what we see a huge, and I think this would be kind of out of Iowa's too, is if you see, you might be seeding 350, 400,000 plants per acre, but when you go out to harvest, there's between 100 and 120, you have all that thinning. And we didn't kind of, I didn't have time to kind of go through that here, but it's just all that self-thinning, and especially in drilled beans where you have some variable emergence. It's kind of interesting that if a soybean that germinates and emerges just a few days behind its neighbor, I mean, you know which one's going to win, and just it's pretty amazing what 2 days will make with a crop such as soybean, which is so plastic. I mean, you would think that it would, since it's so plastic, it would be able to do something, but a couple days, it makes a big difference out there in those higher seeding rates. Yep. Okay.
Really high seeding rates. I mean, there is some of that thinning over the season, but I don't know if it's as high as we think it is.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, when we get in those really high seeding rates, they just simply don't even start.
Don't start. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because we take, you know, stand counts about V2. We'll go through a V2 soybean, and our stands, we didn't see any thinning up to that point. We would have the stands pretty much established at these populations. So it basically, it's anywhere from V2 soybean through R8 is when that self-thinning is occurring. And, you know, and it's really, I haven't really investigated, that hasn't been a focus yet, but it'd be kind of interesting to go into those high populations and see what is the cause. You know, we speculate it's A, B, and C, but I don't know if any of it's been proven. Is it just light? Is it the couple days differences, which we kind of assume it is? Or is it some kind of just disease because of the higher population? Is there something else? So I think that's kind of it'd be a good student for a good project for a graduate student, I think, to spend all the summer out there looking at these things. So, yes, sir. That is basically, here's how I get out of this. I tell my growers, you plant anything you need to get 100,000 plants per acre. That's basically my theory. Because some of these guys, and they've got a 15-inch planter, they can drop 125,000 seeds per acre and get 112 of those up. Then you've got these guys that are sitting in Ohio. I mean, they've got that really tough soil. You know, slugs, all sorts of problems they have to deal with in Ohio, they probably have to drop 260,000 to get 120,000 up. So that's my extension way of getting out of it. I say plant whatever you need to plant to get 100,000. Thank you. That's what I say. And they all laugh at me for being an extension person for saying that.